Welcome, dumbheads, to this week's megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one micro-podcast per day identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Ninjas and Super Spies, the ridiculous RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the previous week's episodes in one megasode, like this one. If you want to follow along at home, we are reading Revised Ninjas and Super Spies, 7th printing, from the year 2000. Today we're discussing page 91 of Ninjas and Super Spies. I want to apologize up front for any problems with audio quality this episode. You see, right behind me, there is a luxurious cat fountain for my pet cats. Running water, as all mobsters hiding from the FBI know, is notoriously difficult for audio equipment to deal with, but I've decided not to turn off the luxurious cat fountain because my cats are people too. They live in this house. They have to be able to drink water, especially during this miserable heat wave that we have here in Portland, where I am recording the podcast. Normally, I try not to bring these little elements of minutiae from my life to you, the listener, especially in this 5-minute format where there's not a lot of time for chit chat. But as it turns out, this little detail is relevant to today's discussion because we are here to talk about Fu Chao Pai Kung Fu, Tiger Style Kung Fu. Tiger Style Kung Fu is for martial artists who are, like me, cat lovers. Or more to the point, martial artists who are not like me, cat fuckers. Let's be honest. This is a style for people who are furries, whose fursona is a tiger, who want to play tiger, while they kick ass. This is a step beyond other kinds of kung fu that emulate animals. We've talked about crane style, and it was very reasonable. The crane is a graceful animal, big sweeping motions. If you're a guy who's into kung fu, you're like, oh, that's a nice crane. Maybe I can work this into my kung fu, right? I can bring my two interests together. I'll parry in a crane-like way. Very reasonable. This is not what Fu Chao Pai is a lifestyle. There's the usual kind of boilerplate that we get with these styles about how it's inspired by the strength and power of the tiger, dedicated to building strength and endurance in its followers. It's aggressive. However, the opening sort of preamble about tiger style informs us, quote, in addition to standard practice and instruction, the student must also take at least one survival trip each year. These trips involve living alone in the wilderness, fasting, hunting with bare hands, and living off the land. So, if you've ever had a friend whose cosplay has gotten out of hand, this is where that happens to the master of Fu Chao Pai. All their friends have been very impressed with, you know, like, they've really been getting in shape, they really seem to be interested in this martial arts thing. Ooh, now they're doing the kind of martial arts where they make little claw hands. Like, that's kind of interesting. I kind of knew he was like a cat guy, but it's nice to see it channeled into this, you know, like he's meeting people, all that stuff. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to do a little getaway. Okay. Now you're looking at his pictures on his Facebook timeline. This seems out of hand. He's out in the middle of nowhere. He's like lying in the grass, wiggling his butt, looking at a deer. What the fuck is he doing? Is that a zebra? What is going on here? He's leaping out onto the zebra, killing it with his bare hands. Not with a weapon and not like clubbing it, not like punching blows, but he's got his hands in that claw position and he's clawing apart this zebra and now he's dragging it home to eat it. It's beginning to seem like this is more about the tiger thing than the kung fu thing. And indeed it is. This style, it is all about emulating the tiger in life as well as in combat. It is noted that practitioners often go shirtless. They wear just the bottom half of the gi and up top it's just bare chested. There's also a real interesting, like, ambivalent obsession with tiger claws. This is not tiger-style kung fu. This is tiger-claw-style kung fu. It does teach the claw hand, which many martial arts do. It also teaches the double claw, which is you use both hands. You forego all defense in your mad enthusiasm for clawing people. And you just use both hands to just, like, make a rawr, like, tiger double-hand claw thing. And then you scrape someone with both hands and do a bunch of damage. There's even a power block slash parry slash claw. That's three things all slashed together because no matter what someone does to you or what you choose to do in return, you find a way to incorporate the claw into it somehow. You also get weapon proficiency claw. So great is your enthusiasm for tiger claws that you learn to use tiger claws, even though tiger claws are not a weapon in this game. You gotta make them yourself, probably from PVC. And yet, we are informed in the introduction to this style. Once in combat, the master will try to keep in combat range, striking out with as many kicks as possible and using claw-type strikes only when the enemy comes too close. Which is very strange for a style that has like 5 different ways to claw people, that it's like claws are a last resort. I don't believe it. I think this is Fu Chao Pai propaganda Like, it's not our fault that we claw people. They got too close. But surely this is like, you're just waiting and hoping. This is like, I wish a zebra would come close. I think these little survival trips are probably the dumbest thing about this style. But if I'm being honest, those are back on page 90 when this style is first introduced, the very beginning of it. So if I had to pick the dumbest thing on page 91, I guess I'm going to go with the weapon proficiency for a weapon that doesn't exist. It's not as egregious as White Jade's fan style, where you have an entire style focused on a weapon that isn't in the book and nothing even analogous to it is in the book. But this is a style for someone who wants to play a sexy catboy. This is explicitly shirtless kung fu. It's like no shirts allowed in Fu Chao Pai. It's got body hardening exercises. So these are body guys. These are not like, you know, wizened old masters who are all wrinkly but can kick your ass. This is like hard-bodied, shirtless tiger enthusiasts. You know that player who plays these characters wants those claws to complete the outfit and complete the look. And their absence in the book, I think, is a glaring oversight. So I'm going to say that since I can't legally technically pick the fact that any master of Fu Chao Pai has definitely brought down gazelles with their bare hands as part of their training, I'm going to go with the absence of claws as the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 92 of Ninjas and Super Spies. I don't have much for you today. For whatever reason, karate is really boring in Ninjas and Super Spies. The game's rules do not seem to be able to capture anything interesting about karate styles. And this page combines Horang Do, which is interesting only because it combines in a weird way with another style that we'll talk about later, and Ishin Ryu, which is just the version of karate that has a bow staff with it. These two styles have almost nothing mechanically very interesting about them. This is the snoozy underbelly of the martial arts system in Ninjas and Super Spies, which is that other than, like, you know, Tiger Claw, okay, let's give it a double claw attack. Aikido, let's give it a little chop that knocks people unconscious. The little gimmick moves. Other than that, these styles, they don't really have a lot that sets one apart from another mechanically. So if you don't give a style a gimmick, there just isn't much interesting to it. It's just numbers that stack up in different ways. If I have to pick a dumbest thing on this page, and I do, because that is the task I have set for myself, I mean, who would have thought that like 50 pages of talking about subtly different kinds of karate could be dull? But Ishin Ryu Karate does have at least something setting it apart from other styles in its little preamble. Each one of these styles, maybe because they're so mechanically similar, gets a little introduction that tells you, like, what the temperament of the practitioners are, or what their philosophy is. And Ishin Ryu gets a list of 8 points or 8 rules that does come from real life Ishin Ryu karate. They don't make any mechanical difference, but they are there. They are authentic. Let me give you a brief rundown. As the heart beats on and off, as heaven and earth rule man, so harmony should be in all things. Okay, balance and harmony. A balanced approach. Got it. Okay. I have begun my journey to mastery of the bow staff. 2. As the blood moves through the body, as the moon and sun move through the sky, so movement should be continuous. I needed some help with this one. I am not a kung fu master in real life, you'll be surprised to learn, so I did have to go look up some Ishin Ryu websites, but I am informed that this is about how, like, blood flows and life flows and everything should be continuously moving and adapting and changing. So, okay, balance, adaptation, change. All right. This I can understand. I do know things about, like, self-help and New Age bullshit, so on the page, divorced from physical action, I can get behind this. All right, rule 3. As the body's fluids come in and out of the body, as all things are either hard or soft, blocks and deflections should match the attack. Now, in the real life version, this is a little cryptic aphorism that, like, drinking and spitting are hard or soft. This is the only canonical mention of spitting that I've been able to find in kung fu, so I believe that rather than picking up the bow staff as the interesting thing about Ishin Ryu, the authors of this game should have taken this as an opportunity to do pro wrestling style poison spits in Ninjas and Super Spies, a martial arts technique I was very eager to see in this game that is sorely lacking. But leaving my personal preferences aside, basically what this is trying to convey to us is everything has either a hard or soft style. Like any one activity, you can do hard or you can go easy, as appropriate to the situation. So this fits, right? Harmony, balance, adaptation, go hard, go soft. All right. Number 4, weight and balance are the same. Lightness and balance are also the same. This is about overbalancing yourself. Don't throw yourself off balance, or anyone can just topple you over regardless of weight. Okay, not only stay balanced, but also don't be unbalanced. All right, I'm beginning to see where we could cut some of these rules, but 8 is a nice round number, so all right. 5, no direction is correct, so any direction must be subject to instant change. Don't overcommit. All right. Number 6, striking should be made only at those times and places when defense is weakest. So this is not one of those aggressive styles. This is not like Fu Chao Pai, where you jump up in your shirtless glory and scratch someone to death with your tiger claws while going meow meow. This is not Phoenix Eye Kung Fu, where you get up on someone in bump and grind stance and just pummel their throat and balls until they submit. This is selective. You only attack when it is safe to do so. All right. Number 7, the eye must see in every direction. Number 8, the ear must hear in every direction. So you maintain alertness, keep your head on a swivel, you're watching out, you're only striking when it's safe to do so, maintaining your balance, not overcommitting. Okay, that is the philosophy of Isshin Ryu. Isshin Ryu has one special move that it gets, and it is the dumbest thing on this page. It is Fortress Penetration Kata, which locks you in for a full melee round, because it is a special kata, to getting a bonus to all-out attack in exchange for a penalty to all your defenses. This style gets one special move that is the exact opposite of all 8 points that define what this style is as opposed to other kinds of karate. It is a special kata that allows you to overbalance, overcommit, forget about defense, take an unbalanced approach, and strike regardless of whether it is safe. So all practitioners are just really bad at remembering these 8 principles. They get into a fight, and then at a certain point, they're just like, ah, fuck it. And they just grab their bow staff like a baseball bat and start whacking away at their opponent. So I applaud Eric Wuchik for researching Isshin Ryu enough to learn about its 8 rules. But I would say the dumbest thing on this page is that the way he chose to represent it mechanically was to give all of its practitioners the ability to forget all about these 8 principles and revert to whack-a-mole style to mindlessly thump their opponents. Today we're discussing page 93 of Ninjas and Super Spies. On this page we are introduced to Jujutsu. It is a style that is not available to those of honorable alignments. It is all about grappling and throwing, using, it says, daggers, sticks, guns, throwing dirt in the eyes, using a ring of keys. The description does not explain how you would use a ring of keys to gain an unfair advantage over your opponent. That is left to the imagination. But all of these things actually are superfluous, because there's a damn good reason that jiu-jitsu is not available to characters of honorable alignment, which is that this is the cheapest motherfucker in the game because of one move, the wrist lock. This game has joint locks in it. Now, Aikido had them too, but we had other things to discuss with Aikido, so I've saved the discussion for today. Many martial arts in this game provide holds, and holds are simply like you roll the strike, you grab the person, and then you just have them. Maybe your friend can beat them up, or maybe you can hold them until the situation is passed. Maybe not the most exciting thing to have in combat, but I understand. It's not that bad because you can roll to get out of a hold. It's tough, you know, it favors the attacker, as I guess it should, but basically it's just you gotta roll to keep a hold of this person every turn while they struggle to get free. Then there are joint locks, which are like holds in that they shut someone down completely. You can't attack or defend or move while you're in a joint lock. But joint locks are also almost inescapable. Up against one opponent, Jiu-Jitsu guy doesn't need to do anything imaginative with his keys. All he needs to do is hit with one wrist lock, and that's it. This is very much like a save or die situation, like you'll recognize from old versions of D&D, where there are hit points and, you know, to hit rolls and all that stuff. But wizards have certain spells that you just have to roll to save, and if you don't, then you're dead. You're done. Right? Like either you're paralyzed, you're turned to stone, or whatever. That's what the wrist lock is. For all the flying kicks and STC and hit points in this game, if somebody grabs your wrist, that's it. You're just fucked. And there's a reason why. The wrist lock targets the one weakness of every character in Ninjas and Super Spies, which is, strangely, given their choice of occupations, pain. There's a save versus pain in this game. No one gets a bonus to it. It's a hard save to make. You have to roll 14 or higher. And if you fail a save against pain, then you pass out. You can't handle it, and you just pass out. So any situation in the game where it is someone floats like, oh, this is really going to hurt, then you got to roll a d20. And if you don't roll a 15 or better, then you just fall unconscious. So here's what happens when someone wrist locks you. They roll the strike. They hit. You're now in a wrist lock. You can't do anything. You can't defend yourself. You can't attack. You can't get away. There's nothing you can roll to break away. The only way to get out of a wrist lock is to voluntarily break your own wrist. And if you do, then you have to save versus pain or pass out. I don't know if we're ever going to get to talk about it in the future, though. So I want to take it a step further because there's another hold. There's another joint lock in this game that is even worse, which is the finger lock. So the finger lock is just like the wrist lock, basically. It does less damage to you if you voluntarily break your finger to escape it, but it is otherwise identical. So the finger lock really is, it's not even about winning fights. It's really about humiliation. Up against any badass martial artist, up against any, you know, the very darkest of dark ninjas, up against samurais, up against grizzled veterans of, you know, military combat, up against anybody, all you got to do is make one roll to strike and grab that little pinky, and there's nothing they can do. They can't get away. They can't defend themselves. They're absolutely helpless. Their only chance of survival is to twist away so that you break their pinky, and two-thirds of the time, they will then give a faint sigh and fall into unconsciousness from the excruciating pain. So I enjoy the finger lock as a tool of humiliation, but in some ways it's actually kind of funnier as like a running joke in your campaign that jiu-jitsu only has the wrist lock, because the wrist lock will lead to the most awkward endgame combat of any combat maneuver. If you know jiu-jitsu, you should be like, this is your go-to finisher. This is how you end fights, is the wrist lock. And the thing about the wrist lock is that it doesn't do any damage unless they try to escape it. So here's what's going to happen. You're going to have a real kung fu battle. You're going to have a regular fight, totally one-sided. They're going to be punching you, kicking you, jumping around, backflipping everything. All you're doing every round is trying to grab that wrist. Then once you get it and you twist their wrist around, then everything just grinds to a halt. They don't take any damage, but it's a two-handed, unlike the finger lock, it's a two-handed hold, which means you also can't do anything. So you finally get a hold of their wrist. You've just been grabbing for their wrist all fight, and they keep pulling it away and like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm trying to punch you here. Then you finally get their wrist, and then you guys just like look each other in the eyes like, oh fuck, now what? Neither of us can punch, neither of us can kick, neither of us can move. There's only one way this can end, which is the thing where I break my own wrist and pass out. But I really don't want to do that. So I guess like you might try to talk it out, scream for help, because I mean, I guess that's your best choice maybe, is just to hope that there's a helpful passerby, a good Samaritan who will come and help you break this wrist lock. There's nothing they can do about that. They can't try to incapacitate you or like hold your mouth and, you know, whatever. They're too busy wrist locking you. So the two of you are just standing here in this alleyway or whatever, and you're just like screaming for help. Like, please, he has me in a wrist lock. I don't know this man. Or maybe you could try to bribe him to let you go. Probably that's not going to work. He's heard it all before. He's wrist locked many people. This is not his first rodeo. So inevitably, it's going to be many turns passing as you try to talk your way out of this or cry for help. But finally, you're standing there and you're going to have to make a very cold, premeditated decision. Okay, I'm going to break this wrist. And so you twist your own hand, you break your own wrist, you fail the stupid hard save, and then you go, ugh, and just pass out. That's going to be the way that 90% of the fights end with a jiu-jitsu master. And he's probably going to love every minute of it, because entrance requirements ensure that he is a sadistic asshole. And that's the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 94 of Ninjas and Super Spies. We've just been through a few pages with martial arts that don't have a lot about them that is overtly silly or worthy of mockery. They're just kind of poorly constructed. We talked about Isshin Ryu's problem with the mechanics not matching the flavor. We talked about Jiu-Jitsu's wrist lock that is going to lead to awkward combat endgames. Now, here we are at a style that is so ridiculous, I almost feel like there's nothing I can add to it. Today, we're discussing Kuo Chuan Dog Boxing Kung Fu. And I quote, "Dog boxing involves stupid-looking paw attacks from ground level, ridiculous barking and yipping noises, and the ability to walk around on all fours. The reason behind this madness is that the moves often deliberately bait other martial artists, causing them to underestimate their opponents and therefore make mistakes. A dog boxing expert, upon being attacked, may immediately fall to the ground and begin wailing as if terribly hurt. Then attacks are made only when the enemy continues to attack. Students of Kuo Chuan are sworn to secrecy when recruited into the school. They are not allowed to reveal their techniques, their teachers, or even their fellow students. The school's public policy is to give demonstrations, but to make them ridiculous enough so that no one will take them seriously. For example, in any fight that is not serious, the dog boxer is supposed to lose deliberately. This helps keep future opponents off guard. The stance is, of course, squatting on the ground, like a dog begging for scraps. So I guess dog boxing is supposed to be a joke. I mean, it seems unsportsmanlike to pick on a martial art for being goofy when it is telling you to literally get on your hands and knees and bark like a dog. It is goofy. It also is it's suggesting a ploy that I think is maybe not sustainable for either the school or the individual. Notably on this page, it's recommended, quote, one of the best martial arts for an espionage agent, especially because it teaches the arts of invisibility. So, okay, it teaches you to sneak, and that's useful to a spy. But from time to time, a spy is going to have to fight. And the thing about a spy is you want to maintain a certain anonymity and a certain low profile. And I think that if you continue to use dog boxing in your spy field work, a pattern is going to begin to emerge that a good spy antagonist is going to start to pick up on. Like, you know, Agent 76, I noticed that you've been foiled a lot in your recent plots to steal the plutonium that we need for the death ray. And while these may initially seem to be unrelated incidents, I note that each time you've had a lot of trouble with a seemingly helpless foe who got on the ground and barked like a dog. I'm starting to think maybe that's the same guy. I think this style also presumes a lot upon your opponent's willingness to really pause and see how this plays out. If someone is trying to kill you, what this style recommends as a survival tactic is to get down on the ground, get your knees and your elbows down there, and then start acting like a pathetic wounded dog, which is, I would go so far as to say, intermediate charades. Like, dog is simple. Dog is maybe like, act like a dog is a melee round action. It's just one, it's like 10 quick seconds, get on all fours, go yip yip. Your opponent's like, oh, it's a dog. And you're like, bark, bark, bark. Yes, exactly. I'm a dog. Acting like a pathetic dog who wants help is more of a multi-stage process. Dog needs to register, and then sort of the intonation of the yelping needs to register. This is an awful lot of attentive interpretation that you're asking from a person who is already trying to shoot you to death. And the way this is meant to play out is that, so someone's pulled their weapon, they're firing shots at you, you're like, oh shit, I gotta revert to my training. Drop on the ground, get on all fours, start yipping. Move around in a halting circular motion to convey that I'm a dog who has been hurt and is helpless so that they will come closer and continue to shoot me. Then, because everybody shoots a dog from close range, I mean, haven't you seen Old Yeller? There's a way this is done. When they sidle up to me with the gun to shoot me at point blank range, then continuing to act like a dog, and this is key, I will begin to engage them in fist paw combat. I'll kill them in dog mode, and then, after the fact, when my espionage opponents try to reconstruct events, they will assume that I was just lucky, and the next time they send an assassin after me, the same trick is going to work. And the way that this con is maintained is that on my off days, right, on my weekends for my spy job, I'll go enter a lot of martial arts tournaments and deliberately do really badly and lose in the first round to give dog boxing a bad name, which really raises questions of how they recruit people exactly. Maybe people don't understand this is dog boxing, because if you look at the maneuvers, let me just give you a little sampler platter of all of the dog-like moves that you learn from this style. Somersaults, backflips, handstands, of course, dogs notorious for handstands, cartwheel, knife hand, tripping leg hook, snap kick, a maneuver that if I had to make a list of every motion that a dog is anatomically capable of, snap kick would be right at the fucking bottom. And then in the style's defense, drop kick. I've never seen a dog drop kick anything, but when I think about slow motion footage that I've often seen on YouTube of dogs catching frisbees out of midair, I can imagine teaching a dog to drop kick. I don't think it would convey as a charades move. It's not what I would go to like say dog to an audience. But if you were teaching a real dog boxing, which I'm sure someone has tried in the storied history of Palladium campaigns, I can imagine getting a dog to dropkick. I think it would be impressive. This style also teaches begging and fasting. I guess probably, you know, like in Tiger style, you have to go on wilderness trips to hunt with your bare hands. I think you have to live like Tramp from Lady and the Tramp for a while when you do dog boxing and just roam from door to door looking like a dog trying to get people to feed you. And you also learn acrobatics and gymnastics, which I like to think they have like a big agility training course set up at the monastery. And you just have to like do an obstacle course montage, but in character as a dog, go through the little tunnel and everything. I don't know how I can be expected to pick a dumbest thing on this page. The fact that this game earnestly recommends that if you're playing a super spy, a James Bond type character, that you fight opponents by getting on the ground and yipping pathetically. I guess the whole thing is the dumbest thing in this page. I don't know. It's a strong contender for dumbest thing in this book. But, you know, while I think the immediate response is the whole concept of dog boxing is the stupidest thing in this page, in this podcast, I'm trying to give this book a deep, close read. And I think given that you're practicing a martial art whose whole strategy is contingent upon conveying to your opponent through charades that you are a helpless dog, the fact that that style specifically gives you the ability to enter combat with a handstand, that's gotta be the dumbest thing on this page. But again, I'm spoiled for options. Today we're discussing page 95 of Ninjas and Super Spies. The style that begins on this page is Lee Kuan Chu. It is a martial art form that is completely pacifist. It is incapable of inflicting damage. And I'm here today to warn you not to fuck around with a master of Lee Kuan Chu, because Lee Kuan Chu is a martial art for psychopaths. As everyone knows who's ever encountered pacifism in role-playing games, most role-playing games have combat as a big old deal, right? Your power level is basically your power level in combat. Therefore, when you take a pacifist option, it gives you lots of compensating bonuses in exchange for the fact that you don't hurt people. So, the holy grail for the power gamer is to find a way to subvert pacifist character options to inflict damage. Because if you can combine all those bonuses with the ability to hurt your opponent, then you can really do some fucked up things to people, which is what role-playing is all about. Needless to say, in Ninjas and Super Spies, the design of this game is not at a level to really keep pacifists from killing people, and Lee Kuan Chu is a nightmare. Lee Kuan Chu basically has one move. It's actually split into a kick and a punch, but they both do the same thing. You make one roll to strike. If you're successful, then your opponent is stunned for 1-6 melee rounds. There is no save. A stunned opponent cannot attack, can take no actions, which I read to mean cannot move from the spot, and takes a substantial penalty to parry and dodge for the duration of the stun, which again can be up to 6 rounds. Not 6 actions, but 6 rounds. In each round, an attacker might attack you anywhere from 2-4 times. What Lee Kuan Chu does is it has these two attacks, like one of them is a double knuckle fist, and the Lee Kuan Chu master swings at your head and then stops just short and doesn't actually contact you, but you're just like stunned and dazed by almost being killed. If that happens to you and you roll a 6 for your stun time, up against an opponent from an aggressive school with the boxing skill for an extra attack, that person might get up to like 30 free shots at you before you get your senses back. Without the ability to take actions, you can't get yourself out of dodge. You can't, speaking of dodge, take an action to dodge. You can't even spend an action to roll with punch to reduce the damage of attacks that you take. And this stun attack, the Lee Kuan Chu master can use it an unlimited number of times. Granted, he's only got one attack per melee, but he only needs to hit with it once. And I'll tell you why. The Lee Kuan Chu master does not take any kind of oath of pacifism. It's just that this style doesn't have any damaging moves. This is a non-exclusive martial arts style, which means that it is available to a wide variety of characters. It is available to military and gizmeteer characters who have cyber knives on their cyber arms, or who carry around explosives or firearms, none of which are involved with martial arts, and all of which the Lee Kuan Chu master can easily use to kill you after stunning you for 6 melee rounds. Because Lee Kuan Chu is a secondary style, it can also be the second style of a dedicated martial artist. So if you decide to take Phoenix Eye Kung Fu as your primary and Lee Kuan Chu as your secondary, you can jump around being a fast little pacifist who's impossible to hit until you manage to stun somebody, then switch to Phoenix Eye, get all up in their business, and just throw Phoenix-themed punches and chops at all their tender vital points for like, what is 6 melees? It's like a minute and 30 seconds? That's a long damn time to be stunned by almost getting punched in the face, so surprised by almost getting punched in the face that you stand there for a minute and a half while someone actually does punch you in the face until you are dead. Now, none of this is in the spirit of Lee Kuan Chu. The rules don't prohibit it, but Lee Kuan Chu itself, as a style, has almost no way to harm people. But there is a way. If you want full credit for subverting pacifism to horrible violence, here's the way to do it. This style does get martial arts techniques, which are special martial arts powers. One of them is the Ki-Ai, which is like a scream that has supernatural abilities. One of these is the Death Scream, which does like 46 damage, and they have a chance, your opponent does, to first of all get out of range. It can only be done within 20 feet, or to roll with punch to reduce the damage. Neither of these are things you can do while stunned. So if you want to use the 100% pacifist martial art of Lee Kuan Chew to horribly kill someone, what you can do is run up to them, lightly troll them by pretending to punch them in the face and then stopping just short so they like try to cover their face and are all freaked out and then are stunned and shocked and can't move. And then, while they can't get away, you scream a horrible scream at them. In the wonderful world of Palladium, this is what pacifism looks like and sounds like. It looks like a kung fu master with a silky white beard screeching at you at point blank range until you die. The other little loopholes, there wasn't much they could do about it, but the Death Scream and Lee Kuan Chew, that's the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 96 of Ninjas and Super Spies, which introduces us to Min Chuan, Cotton Fist Kung Fu. The short description of Cotton Fist Kung Fu is that it is evil Aikido. It is limited to unprincipled, anarchist, and dishonorable alignments. It is an internal, circular, and deflecting style, we learn. Involves, you know, redirecting your opponent's force, that sort of thing. It provides chi training, so this is one of the spooky supernatural martial arts. However, the book informs us, unlike those forms, Min Chuan ignores the concepts of fair play and honor to concentrate on the all-important dictates of victory. So there's something dishonorable and evil about this style, but I wasn't quite sure what it was as I was making my first pass at this. I looked through the stats and it looks an awful lot like Aikido. It gives you chi mastery, same, gives you, you know, defenses. It's got an automatic dodge. We talked about how powerful that can be when we talked about drunken style. Gives you circular parry. And as it says here in the introduction, a master will approach any combat encounter cautiously, carefully evaluating the enemy's technique. Other martial artists, especially those who use a lot of kicking attacks, the Min Chuan master will keep to constant sequence of automatic dodges and circular parries and strike out with hand strikes when it's safe to do so. So these aren't like guys who pick fights. I wasn't really seeing the evil here. They learned body hardening exercises. That just gives you more SDC. Nothing evil about that. In terms of their activities, it says, students do not choose to study Min Chuan. Instead, the masters choose the students. They prefer youths who are purely self-centered and who can be enticed by promises of power and profit. A master will always keep at least four apprentices around as servants. Which sounds kind of sinister, but there's nothing inherently wrong with bringing on apprentices, right? The key, though, the Rosetta Stone here that allowed me to understand what's going on with Min Chuan and what is dishonorable and dishonest about it, is the attacks per melee. One. You only get one attack per melee when you're in Min Chuan, and you don't get another one for a long time. Remember, at the very beginning of this book, they told us that, like, after years of play, most characters maybe barely get to level 9. A Min Chuan master doesn't get any more attacks per melee until level 6. So, over the first two-thirds of playing this character, you only get one attack per melee. It takes one attack per melee to activate your auto dodge. So, when the introduction says that the master will evaluate the opponent, keeping up an auto dodge or a circular parry, and then strike out with hand strikes when it's safe. It's not safe until 6th level. You cannot dodge and attack with this style in the same turn for like the first two-thirds of the campaign. The action economy is fucked. And that's why this entire martial art is an action economy pyramid scheme. There's a reason that these guys travel around with, like, every Min Chuan master has four impressionable young Min Chuan guys who want to be the Min Chuan master. This is Kung Fu Amway. This is one dude who knows what's up, who has recruited four suckers to follow him around in less cool robes and do his actions for him. Because he knows he can't pay the action cost to keep himself alive and hit people. He needs to focus on keeping himself alive with his one action per turn. And then having these four chuckle fucks who think that, you know, any day now they're going to get four stooges of their own. He's got to have them out there doing the palm strikes and the chi powered fist thrusts and all that stuff that this style teaches. This actually is a lot more satisfying to me than a dark version of Aikido that is all about like evil, like we have the metalist chi of all and we will kill you with our radiant red black energy. It's much like what is the dark version of spiritual enlightenment, like redirecting your foe. it is definitely this kind of like vacuous self-help. Like, obviously I have my life together. Look how fancy my robes are. For a small fee and an agreement to do an unpaid internship with me in my spiritual growth industry that I'm a part of, then one day you can be the master and take control of your life. And until then, just go kick that guy. I could kick that guy, but how are you going to build character from me kicking that guy? You go kick that guy. I'm going to be over here dodging. While I am personally thrilled that this game offers the prospect of fighting Kung Fu Tony Robbins, from a pure mechanical perspective, I do have to say that giving auto dodge to a style with only one attack per melee so that you can dodge and never do anything else is the dumbest thing on this page. Join me next time for Monkeys on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. MDC, Palladium Books, Ninjas and Super Spies, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Ciambietta. This slightly annoying theme song is Cartoon Battle by Kevin MacLeod, whose work you can find at incompetech.com. The gong sound effect was recorded by Daniel Simon. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.